Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 5th of June. First hour of our program today, we're going to be talking about a major conference taking place in Minneapolis over the weekend. It's a conference for media reform presented by Free Press, and we'll meet the executive director and co-founder of Free Press in just a moment. Second hour of the show today, an absolutely marvelous book about Bobby Kennedy titled The Last Campaign, Robert F. Kennedy and 82 Days That Inspired America. It's just so well written, and if you were alive during that time period, you remember, I'm sure, the day that he died and his whole campaign and all that was going on politically and the turmoil of that time with civil rights struggles and the war in Vietnam and the assassinations of Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy, and how he really changed to be a man who almost everybody thought was a very good man. It's a good book, and I'm sure you'll enjoy the conversation. Josh Silver is our guest now, executive director and co-founder with Robert McChesney and John Nichols of Free Press. He oversees all the programs, campaigns, fundraising, and special projects. He recently or previously served as campaign manager for the successful statewide ballot initiative for public funding of elections in Arizona and as the director of development for the cultural arm of the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. This conference happening over the weekend in Minneapolis will feature Bill Moyers, Robert McChesney, Arianna Huffington, Dan Rather, Amy Goodman, Phil Donahue, and many others, educators, policymakers, leaders from all 50 states to talk about the future of the media, and that's what we talk about this hour. Josh says that when you, and there's some really interesting radio in Minneapolis, the community, he says, has experienced the damaging impact of consolidation. We'll certainly talk about that, but also the growth of a vibrant non-commercial community and ethnic media sector. We welcome phone calls for Josh. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. And we also have an email address that you can use, which is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hello, Josh. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
So what's the best media around?
Well, fortunately, there's things like Wisconsin Public Radio. There's Amy Goodman. There are little tiny wisps of good quality journalism and quality entertainment on commercial media. But as listeners know, the reason people turn to this dial for their news and information is that the pickings are getting very slim, especially on commercial television, which is the place where about 60 to 70% of Americans go to get their news and information. You know, we started Free Press 5 years ago, John Nichols, Bob McChesney, and I, out of a real deep frustration with the media, its failure to ask the tough questions, to hold government and corporations accountable. For me, it was a moment when I had just watched George Bush get elected, and I thought, you know, there are so many other more qualified people, regardless of whether you're partisan, right-wing, left-wing, more qualified people who could have gotten elected. How did this failed oil man, a guy who can't really finish a sentence, how did he get elected? And then I started asking that question in a very literal way and found that the vast majority of Americans get their news and information from commercial mainstream media that is really just a series of celebrity fluff, soundbite coverage, very superficial he said, she said type debates with very little substance. You can see it even in the election coverage that we're seeing today, where you get these yelling pundits, a Democrat and a Republican, barking at each other with spin, and then they call that debate. So We decided that we had to figure out a way to actually improve the media system for all Americans.
And then it moved from the election, certainly, to the war, where the reporting was pretty atrocious on this major event.
Worse than atrocious. I mean, we saw a situation where the entirety of the mainstream media, with a few minor exceptions, like some notable reporters for the McClatchy newspaper chain, but for the most part, all of the media went along with the spin coming from the White House and the Pentagon. They waved the flag. They did not ask any tough questions. They accepted everything coming out of the White House and the Pentagon as truth. We even saw revelations just in the last few weeks from from TV correspondents Jessica Yellen and Chris Matthews that indeed they were getting pressure from their corporate executive bosses at the big media companies who were, quote, pro-war, and it affected their coverage. We saw mea culpas in the Washington Post and the New York Times about 2 years ago, I believe, when they wrote that they had blown it on the coverage of the story of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. These are mistakes. These are sort of misdeeds by the media that have repercussions that are hard to fathom unless you are a mother or a father who has had their son or daughter come home in a body bag from Iraq, or if you're an Iraqi parent who's watched their innocent family member get killed. Tens, hundreds of thousands have. So this is like its profound implications. And to make matters worse, that same mainstream media on covering issues like the war in Iraq have sanitized it down to a point where there's so little coverage and what you see is so watered down so you don't actually see any of the gruesome images that many Americans are forgetting literally that there's even a war happening.
Mm-hmm. Tell us the story, and I know he'll be there this weekend, Phil Donahue, who really lost his job over having people on the air who had anti-war sentiment before this occupation started, and who will be presenting what sounds like an extraordinarily interesting film at the conference.
Yeah, I mean, Phil Donahue had one of the most successful television shows, nightly news shows on MSNBC, and as the war in Iraq was gearing up, he was very critical of the war, and he was one of the only, I believe he was actually the only corporate television host who was speaking out against the war at that time, and his bosses, General Electric, which is a massive multinational conglomerate, they fired him, and there was a memo that leaked that ran in the New York Times not too long later saying that it was not good for the network to have a voice that is critical of the administration at this time of war. Phil Donahue is going to be here at the National Conference for Media Reform at the Minneapolis Convention Center, which starts tomorrow, Friday at 10 a.m. and runs all the way through till Sunday at 1 p.m. Tomorrow night, Friday night, he'll show his recent film, Body of War, which is an intimate feature documentary about the true face of the war, the war that you're not seeing in the mainstream, that follows the life of a young man named Thomas Young who became paralyzed in Iraq and came home.
Mm-hmm. And the war certainly, and we're even guilty of this to some extent because we've been covering politics so frequently, but you don't see much coverage of the war, and I'm wondering if it's just that we've had it with it, it's been so many years now, or it's too dangerous for reporters to get in and really figure out what's going on there. Why has it disappeared?
Well, I think there's a few reasons. There's one great reason why there's not a more audible and forceful anti-war movement is obvious, and that is that there is still no mandatory draft in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
If people who were middle income and upper income were having their kids, the people who are actually, sadly, the only ones that are really influential in this sort of money-soaked and somewhat corrupt political system that we have today, if they were having their young ones sent off to fight and die, you can bet that there would be a much more forceful anti-war movement. That's one. But the second is the larger structural media issue, which is really what we have to think about, and that's what people are talking about at the National Conference for Media Reform here in Minneapolis this weekend, and that is that the very structure of the media system is stacked against quality journalism, that as media consolidates, we have most 90% of the media that most Americans see and hear every day is owned by a handful of companies, and as that happens, the pressures to increase profits and make more money, they increase commensurately with that consolidation. And so if you're a smart media owner, you're going to cut newsroom staff. You're not going to go send a crew to Iraq because it's expensive more than anything, even more than being dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to put on more easy-to-cover things like the O.J. trial or Paris Hilton or Brad and Angelina or a cat in a tree or a car crash or a fire. And you're going to stay away from being too critical of politicians, because what you find is these companies have gotten so big, they rely on policies that are worth so much money to their bottom line that it is against their financial interest to anger politicians who could in turn fail to give them the policy favors they need. And then, of course, advertising becomes so important in this for-profit environment where, you know, companies don't want to see gruesome images coming back from Iraq while they're trying to sell their French fries and Humvees.
Right. Or their drugs that have all these side effects. You know, that's what's on the news almost every single ad for people who are getting older, I guess.
Yeah, but I definitely, you know, Kathleen, I definitely do not believe for a minute that people are, you know, tired of the coverage of the war. What the people are is they're tired of the war.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to know. People want to know what's going on. They don't want to be lied to and obfuscated. They don't want to be spun. And that's what's unfortunately what is happening in the mainstream media.
What's interesting, and I don't want to toot our own horn here, but it is true that people in Washington, I think, listen to NPR coverage because it seems to me far and away they have some terrific international coverage now. Nobody else is going to Pakistan to do in-depth weekly reports or doing the kind of reporting that came out of China or the reporting from Iraq for that matter. They have invested money and reporters and good, smart reporters in international journalism.
Yeah, and you're reinforcing my point, which is that National Public Radio is not a for-profit multinational corporation. So when they see returns on their product, when they have money, they spend it on journalism and not on simply laying off staff and tweaking up their profit margins just a little bit. You have to realize that, you know, media properties, be it television, radio, newspapers, have been making money hand over fist for generations. They are extraordinarily profitable, often running as high as 30, even 40% profits at newspapers and televisions. It's true. And so what you're seeing is because, for example, in the newspaper industry where the internet's sucking away some of the advertising revenue, those profits are going down. So now they're around 20% or 16 or 17%, which is still much higher than most Fortune 500 companies. But with the nature of big companies, they just will do anything to increase their bottom line. And sadly, in media, that means really destroying the product.
Right. Is Minneapolis still a two-newspaper town?
Yeah, it is, and you know, it's the Star Tribune is the biggest circulation paper. Sadly, because of consolidation nationwide, we've seen that more than half of American cities are one newspaper towns. We have seen just recently. I mean, one thing that bears mentioning here, you know, there really is a media reform movement that has taken flight, especially over the last 5 years, and it kicked off in 2003. When the Federal Communications Commission tried to pass a set of rule changes that would allow the largest media companies to get much bigger.
Right.
It was turned back by a chorus of 3 million Americans, conservative and liberal, saying they didn't want it, and then the courts later rejected it. But what's interesting is last year, in the end of 2007, the FCC, headed by a gentleman named Kevin Martin, another President Bush appointee, tried to do something which is called removing the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership ban, which is a complicated way of saying removing a law that prevents a daily newspaper from also owning radio and TV stations. Well, they passed it by a 3-2 partisan vote, despite the protests of FCC commissioners Copps and Adelstein, who will both be here this weekend in Minneapolis. And now we're seeing another huge backlash. The public is saying no. 2 weeks ago, actually three now, the U.S. Senate voted nearly unanimously to reverse that FCC decision.
Hmm.
So we really are starting to see traction where people are realizing that no matter what issue you care about, whether it's the environment, healthcare, the war in Iraq, women's issues, that you have to have a critical, accountable, fearless media system where there's many voices and that there's real dissent, and that if we don't have that, we're not going to move any issue that we care about. And that's why we're going to see about 3,500, maybe even 4,000 people at the Minneapolis
Convention goodness.
Center.
That's large.
Yeah.
You talk about, and I'm not real familiar with the Minneapolis market, but you talk about the damaging impact of consolidation in that city, but also the growth, and then I read a little bit about this vibrant non-commercial community and ethnic media sector. It's very interesting and quite large.
It is. It's relatively large, and that's a real credit to that sort of progressive, independent spirit of this part of the Midwest that many of your listeners are familiar with because you're part of it. But unfortunately, that is the exception, not the rule. And unfortunately, when you look at all the countless focus groups and polls, we still see that the vast majority of Americans get their news from commercial television news. Radio and television is actually going down as a source of news, and the Internet is going up, although the Internet is not going up as quickly as many people would have you believe. We still have a country where less than roughly half of American households do not have high-speed Internet connections. But another thing that's important to mention is that a big topic that's going to be at the National Conference for Media Reform, which, by the way, is at freepress.net on the web, is this whole issue of the Internet and the fact that all television, radio, phone service, movies, everything in your communications world, save a printed page, is moving to the Internet, so it'll be delivered by a high-speed Internet connection. And right now, there is a epic battle happening in Washington, D.C., over who is going to control the Internet, and will the phone and cable companies be able to control it and slow down content on the web and tell you what downloads fast and what doesn't. And it's going to impact the future of our media for generations. So the debates we're talking about here at the National Conference for Media Reform will shape the media that your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren see.
And what is your assessment of the quality of journalism from the Internet? There's been criticism that what they're doing is rehashing stories that have been done in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, some of the better newspapers in this country, and there aren't a lot of top-notch investigative journalists who are doing their own thing on the Internet.
Well, you know, I think that's a mixed bag. I mean, the reality is, I think one of the things that analysis has right is that the vast majority of the most visited news sites on the web are actually the websites that are owned by the large companies, the New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, Associated Press. They get a ton of traffic. However, we are starting to see where there are outlets like the Huffington Post, Arianna Huffington will be here this weekend at the conference, like this site Politico, where people are starting up these new news outlets that are able to create a quality product for a much, much lower overhead, and it's starting to work. For example, Arianna Huffington has a product at HuffingtonPost.com that actually is starting to turn a profit, which is one of the firsts. And she's hiring investigative journalists, and it's a very interesting model that should be watched. But you're right. I mean, the Internet is not, as a general rule, a go-to place for local coverage especially. And we need to understand that newspapers continue to be the number one source for local news. Radio, there's some great exceptions, like Wisconsin Public Radio, that does a great job, but in many places there is virtually no local radio coverage, and we need to also be looking at what kinds of tax subsidies and other policy incentives can help enhance local media and make it provide the kind of media that we need.
We go to phone calls for Josh in just one moment. Josh Silver is executive director and co-founder of Free Press and the 2008 National Conference for Media Reform, presented by Free Press, happening this weekend in Minneapolis with thousands of people coming in from all over the country, including their keynote speakers, and I'm just giving you a few of them here: Bill Moyers, Robert McChesney, Arianna Huffington, Dan Rather, Amy Goodman, Phil Donahue, and many others. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, Thurston Clark will be joining us, author of, it's a marvelous book, I just couldn't get away from it yesterday, The Last Campaign, Robert F. Kennedy in 82 Days That Inspired America. He says that he wasn't a saint, there was a good Bobby and a bad Bobby, but he had this tremendous sense of morality, and to read the first few pages of this book, which highlights the funeral train that went from New York to Washington, D.C., and what reporters were seeing along the tracks, just moves you to tears. It's a wonderful book. So he will be with us, Thurston Clark, who's the author of The Last Campaign, the second hour of our program. All right. We got a lot of phone calls coming in for Josh. Our lines are filled, but just keep the number in mind, and we hope you'll be able to get through during the rest of the show. 800-486-8655. Rick from La Crosse. Hi, Rick.
A very good morning. I have a question and an example, and I'll get off the phone. My answer off the phone.
Okay.
Anyway, what can we as ordinary people do to keep the media from becoming a megaphone of government propaganda, as in the lead up to the Iraq war? And I'll give you an example. Like right now, I'm involved in a campaign to get the New York Times, the Washington Post, NPR, and other news outlets to stop vilifying Hugo Chavez. And I write their ombudsman, and, you know, if I get one response back from an ombudsman, you know, it's a lot. You know, they never really read those letters, or it'll probably be a form letter, you know. And I take issue, you know, with what, it's day in, day out. The next war might be with Venezuela, who knows? And then it'll be for the same flimsy pretext as, and with the media, cheerleading.
It's a great question, and you know, there's some other notable propaganda that I should mention that we didn't in the first half hour, and that is, if you look back since 2005, there's been three really striking and scary examples of the corporate media passing along government propaganda without a critical ear or eye, and really duping the American public. One was in January of 2005, when we found out that there were people like Armstrong Williams who got $240,000 from the Department of Education to promote the president's No Child Left Behind Act in his newspaper opinion pieces and on television, no disclosure. A few months later, we found out that the government agencies were sending these so-called video news releases to local television stations, commercial stations, and they looked like news. They looked like actual news with real reporters that the government had hired. And they were plugging government policies, and of course, corporations do it all the time with their products. And then finally, most recently, we found out that 75 retired generals and retired military staff were being regularly trained by the Pentagon in a program that cost millions of dollars, and that those pundits and analysts were put on the air more than 4,500 times on all mainstream media.
Oh my.
And national public radio.
Oh my.
And with no disclosure. So propaganda is a massive problem. And sadly, there's no quick and easy fix, but I think what the caller gets to is that there are increased efforts by organizations like MediaMatters.org and Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, which is fair.org, to hold the media accountable and to constantly hold their feet to the fire and call them out when they do misdeeds like this, when they do things like what the caller was talking about, and that we have seen that the extreme right has done that very effectively. I mean, the whole effort by the far right to paint the media as liberal, which is completely false, has been very effective, and they do it by dogging the media and constantly complaining. Katie Couric from CBS admitted just recently that kind of pestering was extremely effective to the detriment of the media in the run-up to the war, where any time she would say anything even slightly critical of the Bush administration or the war, she would get a chorus of disapproval. So you just have to keep on them, and at the same time fight for the structural changes that I've been talking about.
Thanks, Rick, for the call. You mentioned this earlier, but I wonder how much will be covered by your website. We have an email, Mr. Silver. Will the many seminars at the conference be made available online via YouTube or some other site for the many interested who will not be able to attend this weekend in Minneapolis?
Yes. In fact, the biggest sessions are going to be live streaming on the website, which is www.freepress.net.
Okay.
Or if anybody has satellite out there, Free Speech TV is also going to be covering much of the conference. And then every session will be available for audio download at freepress.net as well.
Mm-hmm. What about satellite? Do you listen to satellite? Is it the wave of the future?
No, it's actually not. I mean, satellite is what we call a transitional technology. Satellite is not going to be around forever, because what we're seeing is
And keep in mind, satellite only comprises about 14 or 15% of television viewers. And we just saw the merging of the two largest satellite radio companies. But what is going to happen eventually, and it's really important that people who care about the media really put on your sort of future-seeking hat here, because you got to understand where technology is going. In the future, our country is going to be connected largely by internet, webs of internet coverage. So in the way that radio stations can blanket a community with radio station signals now, it will instead be internet signals. And when that happens, people are going to be getting their radio and television all through internet signals, digital signals, which also can completely break open the current bottleneck on access and distribution of content, so that in the future, every website could be a television network or a radio network. It's really exciting, and that's why so many people are coming to Minneapolis this weekend, is because if this movement that's joining this weekend is successful, that connectivity will be ubiquitous, it'll be affordable, it'll be fast, and every person in this country can have a voice. If we lose cable companies like Comcast and Time Warner, and phone companies like Verizon and AT&T are going to seize control of the technology, and we will see the internet become like cable television.
Hmm. Richard from Black River Falls, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Some of my question has already been answered, but when you get a newscast or a page off the internet, and it's completely false or bogus, whatever which way you want to look at, or half truths, how do you check something that out, like that out, when once it's out there and they call you a bum, and you want to know how do you retaliate, and you can't find out where it started from?
That's a really good question. And I'll tell you, my dad, who's 75, he got the internet into his house in 1999, and he ended up being one of those guys, God love him, who got like 8 cases of tuna fish in his basement for Y2K because he thought that the whole world was going to like freeze on his access.
A lot of people did.
Yeah, because he was so worried by what he'd read on the internet. And what you realize is that you have to learn how to be a smart media consumer. And I know you weren't trying to plug the conference, the caller, but that's going to be another set of topics that we're going to be dealing with at the Minneapolis Convention Center, is how do you learn how to be a smart media consumer in the 21st century? How do you figure out which websites are actually true and which aren't? How do you figure out how to separate the wheat, you know, the wheat from the chaff? Because there is a lot of bogus stuff out there, and one thing that is encouraging is that young people who have grown up with this technology, they seem to be much better at older folks at figuring out what's legit and what isn't.
Hmm. Thank you so much for your call. Jim from Salt Lake City. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. You sound well. That's good to hear.
Thanks.
You know, you were talking about corporate mergers and things like that. We're fortunate in Salt Lake City to have two newspapers, but one of them was sold to a Denver corporation. And I have a friend who still works for that paper. And what's interesting, during the holidays, when there's more ads being printed, the corporate people have said, we're not going to print more pages. We're just going to have less news. We're going to keep our costs the same. So during the Christmas time, there's hardly any news because everyone's running all these ads to go shopping. And I think that's horrible. I mean, that a corporation's thinking so much about the bottom line that they forgot their mission to begin with.
Was that Media General that bought it?
I'm sorry?
Was it Media General, the company that bought it?
I think so. They own the Denver Post.
Yeah. So the problem is you're hitting the nail on the head, which is when large companies, again, when they buy media properties, these are nothing but cash cows for them. There is democracy, and informing the public simply does not fit into the equation, period. That is a given. It's a truism, and there's no arguing with it. So the decisions they're making are very rational for their shareholders to whom they are obliged. So the problem is the American public and democracy itself are the ones who are left on the side of the road with nowhere to go. And so the challenge for us is to tighten regulations which have been on the books for years but have been whittled away by the largest media companies, to actually ensure that these media companies have to commit their public service and do right by the public, that they can't own too many properties, because it is the consolidation of media ownership that not only increases advertising pages and guts newsrooms, but it also, interestingly, is directly correlated to increased use of violence, sex, and vulgarity on the airwaves, which we see the biggest offender is Fox News, owned by Rupert Murdoch and the Fox Network.
Thanks, Jim, for the call. Which ones are the cash cows? I keep reading that newspapers are going under, that people aren't reading papers, that within 5 years we won't have any newspapers. Are you talking about commercial television that's the cash cow, or what's the cash cow?
Yeah, the main cash cows are commercial TV. I mean, that's where the big money is. But, you know, the newspaper story is really, as I said earlier in the show, you hear a lot of belly aching from the newspaper owners who have a loud megaphone. So you hear it gets turned up louder than it should be. They're watching their profit margins go from 30% down to 16 or 17%. There's a mythology that newspapers are becoming impossible and not viable. That's simply not true. Because if that was true, you would start to see more competition in more cities across the country, where other newspaper properties would start up successfully and compete. So, you know, these guys still have generally monopolies on their markets and are still making lots of money.
Thanks, Jim, very much for the call. Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, Josh Silver is our guest here on the Ideas Network this hour, executive director and co-founder of Free Press. They're having their 2008 National Conference for Media Reform this weekend in Minneapolis it's the largest gathering of its kind in the country, with all kinds of people who are very much at the forefront of the media reform movement. Bill Moyers, Robert McChesney, Arianna Huffington, Dan Rather, Amy Goodman, Phil Donahue, and many others, looking at the future of the press. And we're welcoming your calls. In case you can't be there, as many people can't, it will be live streamed at www.freepress.net. And here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Email once again, talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, Thurston Clark will be joining us. His latest book, and it's a good one, The Last Campaign, Robert F. Kennedy and 82 Days That Inspired America. All right, back to phone calls, 800-486-8655. We go to Jack from Milwaukee next. Hi, Jack.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, being a firm believer in capitalism, is if people aren't receiving the news they need from newspaper and news outlets, wouldn't the market dictate places or organizations like NPR and the Internet rise faster in population? And if so, the real question is, are people even aware that they're not getting the correct amount of news?
Great question. And yeah, you know, it's the situation with U.S. journalism is a lot like that analogy of a frog warming up in water so slowly they don't realize that they're getting boiled and burned. I mean, the U.S. public has been so deprived of real journalism for so long, they don't even really know what they're missing. And that's a problem, because a lot of times people will say, well, isn't the media just giving the public what they want? And the reality is no. I mean, the media is producing as cheap to produce fare that they can, like reality shows and American Idol, which, you know, turn massive profits but don't really do a whole lot to increase the sort of the knowledge base of the public. And I guess a better example would be these sort of fluffy shows like Dateline and 2020. But the public doesn't really understand what hard-hitting journalism is until they turn on, say, a documentary by Frontline or a news show by Bill Moyers that really digs in and uncovers the truth. And sadly, you know, as I said at the top of the show, the news producers at the largest media conglomerates, NBC, CBS, CNN, they're actively being dissuaded from digging in and doing the kind of hard-hitting journalism that really uncovers government and corporate wrongdoing.
And was there a golden age of hard-hitting journalism?
Good question. I mean, there was not so much a golden age because it's always been consolidated. I mean, major companies have controlled the media since its birth. I mean, they seized control through policymaking in Washington of the airwaves around television in the 1930s or in the 50s, and radio in the 1930s, cable TV in the 1980s. But you did see some notable things, like, as everyone probably recalls, during the Vietnam War, when Walter Cronkite at CBS said the Vietnam War is not, we're not winning, and he showed images from the front line that were truly disturbing, and everyone understands that that was the turning point in public opinion, and it was because he had the ability to say what he really believed. And not coincidentally, at that time, CBS treated the nightly news as a money loser. They accepted the fact that they would not make a profit on their news hour, but instead they would take a loss but provide the kind of critical journalism that the public needed. That's changed. Now the networks all treat their news divisions as major cash cows.
Hmm. Thanks, Jack, for the call. Tom from Oshkosh. Hi.
You calling Tom?
Yeah, Tom.
Oh, hello. Yes, I'm reading a book unrelated to politics. It's by a physician, and one of the paragraphs jumped out at me, or a sentence that said, the beginning of wisdom is to call a thing by its right name. The beginning of wisdom is to call a thing by its right name. I'm wondering if your organization plans on trying to do something about getting the language correct. And I go back to the Iraq situation. Anybody that knows anything about it knew it would be a very short invasion and a very long occupation, and there is no war going on over there. It's an occupation, and we all use the word war. Do you plan on doing anything to get to help us get the language correct?
Well, you know, you make a good point, which is language is very powerful. And, you know, people did, if you recall, for many years in the war in Iraq, the government and therefore the mainstream media called it the liberation of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
They would not use invasion. Of course they wouldn't use occupation, God forbid. So it's very powerful. And part of the problem is you're getting to a deeper issue, and that is the fact that the media is unwilling to say that this, for example, is a fact, that we are occupying Iraq because they are so afraid of the blowback that they'd get from government because of the dynamics we've talked about. A good example to make my point is global warming. With global warming, for decades, while the rest of the world knew that it was a real problem that posed grave dangers to our planet, that was a given in those countries. Global warming is real here because of well-funded think tanks funded by the petroleum industry and influential lobbyists. We had this sort of he said, she said, where
right.
the U.S. media treated global warming as if it were just a theory. And when there was a debate about it, you'd have a pro, there is a global warming
right.
person, and there's not a global warming theory person on the same show, and they would argue. And at the end, the viewers would still have no idea. So we were about two decades behind because of that problem you're naming, where the mainstream media will not find the facts, dig them up, and name them. Instead,
mm-hmm.
we have these artificial debates.
It seems to me as though it's a partial responsibility, a major responsibility of the press to guide us to the truth, to try and find what the truth is discernible as it may be, or is it as difficult as it may be. I think that it was ludicrous to have global warming is not happening and global warming is happening on the same level.
Right. But then you look at our elections. I mean, what the media considers to be a debate to get to the truth, well, to get a partisan Democrat and a partisan Republican to get into a shout fest on television and argue
right.
about the horse race aspects of the campaign. How is the Reverend Wright controversy for Barack Obama going to play with middle-aged soccer moms? And how is Hillary's latest gaffe going to play with white men from the Bible Belt. They're doing this constant kind of mind-numbing partisan shallow debate while failing to actually say, well, how does Barack Obama's policy statements actually jibe with what he voted on in Illinois and while he was in the U.S. Senate?
I know.
You know, and with Clinton the same. It's like there's a complete lack of focus on actual substantive news and information.
But I got to tell you, I'm hooked on those shows. Why is that, Josh? I'm a political junkie, and maybe it's there's not very much else going on. But I watch those pundits, you know? I don't think they inform me necessarily, but it's sort of it's like my sports.
Sure.
That's what it is.
You also don't have choices. I mean, when you turn on the TV, you can click around any given time. You're going to get MSNBC, CNN, or Fox, and they're all doing the same thing.
Right.
I would argue that if you had people who were actually talking about substantive issues, you'd go there.
Right. Let's go. Thanks, Tom, very much for your call. Let's go next to Wayne from Holman. Hi, Wayne.
Well, good morning. Go Brewers.
They're on a roll, aren't they?
I'm a sports fan, and so you're my kind of gal. and God bless you, and I hope everything's going well for you.
It is. Thanks.
Yep. Well, we love you on public radio. I'm a Christian conservative, but I'm still welcome on this program, which is kind of neat. The question I would have, or maybe just a comment, is that I think we all know Terry McAuliffe and Ed Rendell, and they complimented Fox News. And, you know, I listen to the Sunday morning program with Chris Wallace, and there's Mara Liasson and Juan Williams, who I really like, although he comes from the left, but these aren't staunch right-wingers. But Terry McAuliffe and Ed Rendell said that Fox News was the fairest and most balanced of the programs that were presented regarding the run-up to this election and the primaries and so forth between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And I guess, what say you, sir? I know Fox News is not well-liked by liberals, but is that a fair description of what Terry McAuliffe and Ed Rendell said? Because I heard them say it. And I'll take my question off.
All right, Wayne. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for your call. Well, you know, I'm not really, I don't defend Fox or perceived liberal media. That's not sort of how I come at it. I think what's very important is that Americans, that the caller, get away a little bit from this notion of, you know, if you're a Democrat, you're a liberal. If you're a Republican, you're a conservative. Because the reality is that in our money-soaked political system, where money decides what laws get passed and what don't, which politicians get elected and which don't, we've got a system that is inherently corrupt. I would argue, I believe, that the two gentlemen you mentioned, Ed Rendell and Terry McAuliffe, are corrupt, and as are so many members of both parties. And the fact that they would say that about Fox is kind of irrelevant, because at each stage of their careers, they sacrificed the public interest for that of major corporations. We saw it with Ed Rendell on my issues, media issues, when he handed Verizon, the giant phone company, the keys to Philadelphia to set up a wireless internet system that failed and was totally unfair to the city of Philadelphia and profitable to Verizon. So I think you have to be more aware of this massive number of and growing number of Americans who don't feel very identified with either the Democratic or the Republican Party, who are really frustrated with the entire system, and we recognize more and more the need to get away from this Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative frame, and think of it more broadly about, you know, do these people care about the issues that I really care about, and are they actively working to support them or not?
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Edith is next from Madison. Hello, Edith.
This is much more heavier.
Hello, Edith.
Really smart people with the extra chromosome.
I'm sorry, I pushed the wrong button. This is Edith from Madison. That obviously wasn't. Hello, Edith.
Oh, thank you. I just want to thank your guest for mentioning two of my most favorite PBS programs and the reason why I support public broadcasting as much as I can. Frontline and Bill Moyers Journal. I have a file folder 4 inches thick with the copious notes I take on each program.
Oh, do you?
When they're listed, I will go nowhere. I am in front of my TV screen.
Well, you know, thanks for that comment, but I'm going to now tell you something that's a little sad, and that is that we have in the United States the lowest per capita funded public broadcasting system in the industrialized world.
Hmm.
And it's really unfortunate because we've got a situation where really only 15% of PBS's budget comes from the federal government, another 15% from state. And they are really, they have their backs against the wall at public broadcasting. They are underfunded, and they are unduly subjected to the political whims of Washington. When PBS publishes something, runs a story that is very critical of members of Congress, those members of Congress then say, we're not going to fund you. So we have a situation where another major issue that we'll be talking about at the National Conference for Media Reform, that people are invited to come to, by the way, we still have room at the Minneapolis Convention Center this weekend, is talking about how can we save public broadcasting? How can we increase funding and insulate it from undue political pressure?
Well, I would like to see that happen.
Yep. So would I. I'll agree with you on that. Did you hear Moyers when he was on with us, Edith, a couple weeks ago?
Oh, absolutely.
He was great. He was great. And the book is as well. It's older essays, but they are still so important to today.
Oh,
and
yes.
So beautifully written.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And Bill Moyers will be speaking at 8 a.m., a little bit early.
I heard the announcement of that.
8 a.m. on Saturday.
And you have another guest there, my favorite, John Nichols.
Yep.
From Cap Times.
Yep, the co-founder of our organization, Free Press, will be here all weekend.
Wonderful.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Edith. We go next to Charlie from Fish Creek. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
This has been a pleasure so far, and I have a question, my question is this, and I think if we're going to try to reform the system and to get the media to be liberated, I think it's essential that we have campaign finance reform. And if that is true, then how do we get the people who have the most to lose to give campaign finance reform a fair shake in the national media?
I'm so glad you asked that question. You know, fixing the media and getting money out of politics go hand in hand. And really, there's a growing number of Americans who are starting to understand that. But it's a tough one because you have to connect quite a few dots to understand it. So many people are dealing with such direct problems of poverty, health care access, and other immediate needs that it's really hard to back up and realize that these structural reforms are crucial. There are some bright spots. There are cities and states around the country that have passed the only real viable solution, which is the full public funding of elections.
I agree.
Where you get money out. And you know, fortunately, there are some increasing numbers of leaders in the Senate and the House of Representatives and even some presidential candidates who have come out actively supporting public funding of elections. There's a great group called Public Campaign, publiccampaign.org, that has a lot of information on this issue. There is a pre-conference happening here in Minneapolis today about this issue, and a panel about it as well in the conference, and I couldn't agree with you more. We have to get money out of politics and make sure that the electoral system voting is done fairly.
I just feel like the wolf are watching the sheep, you know.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We have time for a couple more phone calls. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. Are you hopeful, Josh, that things are going to change and we'll get more information that's true and dug out and done by responsible reporters, or do you feel this sense of fatalism about the conglomeration and the lack of interest in something that's meaningful?
No, I have a ton of confidence, because what we've seen over the last couple of years is nothing short of astounding. We saw in 2006 the Republican Congress and the Republican White House, at the prodding of the largest phone and cable companies, tried to abolish something called net neutrality permanently, which would allow them to set up toll booths on the internet and turn it into a new version of cable TV. We saw 1.6 million people say no, right-wingers, left-wingers, conservatives, liberals, and we actually stopped them in their tracks. And that whole debate, which was everyone believed was going to sail through the way media policy had sailed through on behalf of the largest companies for generations, that debate continues now. And we have this opportunity where we're seeing, for example,
that the Democratic presumptive nominee for president has come out in support of net neutrality and in support of protecting the internet and against consolidation of ownership. We're seeing much more support at the highest levels of government for the kind of media that we need to support democracy. And I believe if we organize well here in Minneapolis this weekend and across the country and at freepress.net, we will win the kind of internet future that will make every website be able to be a TV or radio network and literally give anybody listening to this radio show the affordable ability to share your message, start your own network, and become a journalist and become a part of the solution.
Well, there's a vision. Thanks, Josh. It was a great hour. Have fun this weekend.
Thanks so much.
Josh Silver is executive director and co-founder of Free Press and their 2008 National Conference for Media Reform. They are the sponsor of this event. It's taking place this weekend in Minneapolis. They'll be looking at, well, thousands of people will gather to offer visions, ideas, solutions to building a better media system. You can watch this if you would like, if you can't get there, at www.freepress.net. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, John Treader for on-air production, and to you for listening. News ahead, we'll return.